to the Raw Rugby League podcast. I'm Mike Mihalwood, and today we're going across the ditch to talk about everybody's second favourite rugby league team, the New Zealand Warriors. There's been plenty of chats about the vibe, the signs, the coach, Dallin Mateniak's luxurious hair. So I thought we'd get two experts from Aotearoa, New Zealand, to fill us in on how this looks from the ground. We've got two of the most recognisable voices in Kiwi sports broadcasting, Craig Norenberg and Martin Devlin, Ki Aora.
So, hello.
How are we doing? Hey, Craig, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Australian Capital Territories football sides across the weekend.
He's having a go at me because I'm originally from Canberra, so I'm a big Brumbies and big Raiders supporters. And I went on Saturday night to Eden Park to watch the Blues and the Brumbies play what was expected to be a top-of-the-table clash that would set a marker for how these teams are going to go heading into the final series. Brumbies got thrashed. It rained. I had a long walk to get there. I spent hundreds of dollars for my son and his friends to go, and the Brumbies got thrashed.
Excellent. Was a good night. Hey, well, at least the Raiders came.
I rushed home thinking, all right, yin and yang, and then the Raiders got thrashed by the Brumbies and had lots of injuries, so wasn't a good night. Can you see where Martin Devlin was going there and what he was doing?
Just off air, I was explaining how I learned what the word ropeable meant at the weekend as a Manly supporter, having watched them play against the Titans and decided that defending is something that other people can do. Yeah. But we try not, on this podcast, we try not to spend too much time in the here and now. We like to take a long lens. This is the slow takes, as I like to call it. So I guess that's a good place to start, is having gone to the rugby union on Saturday night. What we're told over here, if you read certain newspapers, is that the Warriors are bigger than rugby union now. Is that an overstatement?
Well, look, I'll kick it off. I'll say that no. And I think you've got to make that point loud and clear. The All Blacks are the All Blacks are the All Blacks. And the All Blacks will always be the number one sporting team in New Zealand. And I can't see a time really where rugby is not our national game. However, in Auckland in particular, I think it is fair to say right now that Auckland is a rugby league town. And that is just sheer, you know, you can call it optics, you can call it metrics, you can throw whatever term you want at it. I look at it just in terms of the crowd numbers that are going. I look at it in terms of you go to a pub and watch these games. And I've been when the codes have clashed and crossed. You know, last year, for example, the Blues were playing a quarterfinal knockout at Eden Park. I was in a pub called Shapiro's, which is actually a stone's throw. You can see Eden Park from that pub. 19 out of the 20 screens flicked to watch the Warriors play. They were away at Canberra that night, Craig. And that whole pub should have been full of people that were at Eden Park watching the rugby. Everywhere you go in Auckland, it doesn't matter what time of the day or night, you will see Warriors gear. You'll see people wearing Warriors jerseys. You won't see anything to do with the Blues. I think that in terms of certainly the younger generations, and I would say that people under 30, I would say that the Warriors have captured that audience massively at the moment and rugby hasn't. So on a national scale, look, I still think the All Blacks are the All Blacks, as I said, but yeah, certainly in Auckland at the moment, the Warriors are the buzz and the Breakers are the buzz. And so they should be, because these teams are providing fantastic entertainment. They're both winning or mostly winning. And also the spectator experience, I know we're going to talk about that, is probably second to none compared to what rugby is offering. But Craig, you went to Eden Park.
Yeah, I think you're right. I wasn't really impressed with what Eden Park put on for the pre-game and the halftime entertainment. The lights going down is very good, and I'm sure it'd be better if there was a big crowd there. There wasn't much of a crowd. I'd go further to say that maybe the North Island New Zealand embraces rugby league more than the South Island. I went on a golf tour last year around the South Island, and the vitriol, the demarcation line between league and union, they weren't fans. Some of them went to the point of telling me they hated rugby league, and I'm pretty sure that they hadn't watched much of it. It was probably akin to if you're an Australian and you grew up in certain areas where they hate rugby union. I've never understood why you can't like both. There is an argument, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit later, that if you were going to stick a second team in New Zealand, you'd put in Auckland. Similar to in Brisbane, you've got three teams, or even four within that whole state. You could put another team in Auckland and it'd do very well. But it's whether they push south and try and put a team down there. Rugby league teams suck money, so they're going to have very deep pockets to do it. Maybe you put another team in Auckland and you've got the rivalry going on there, because, as Martin's pointed out, rugby league, when I walk into work, it's all anyone wants to talk about. They want to talk about Super Rugby. They want to talk about what's happening in the NRL, because the NRL is a tough competition. Super Rugby, fraying at the edge. If you have a look at what we were talking about happened on the weekend, the Brumbies and the Blues, there is still a distance between the two teams. With the NRL, week to week is a better competition to watch.
So there's an interesting point. You touched on the South Island there, right? I'm sure we'll get to the expansion in due course. But I spoke to Solomon Adamolo, who plays for the West Tigers. Well, he doesn't play for the West Tigers. He plays for the West Magpies, but he's an ex-Rugby Union Super Rugby player. And he told me before the season that he just didn't watch Rugby Union anymore. And he'd come across the Rugby League because that's all that he watched. That was all that his mates watched. He's from Christchurch, so he's a South Island. He was playing in the South Island. And I just thought that his main point wasn't so much that one game was better than the other, but he said if there was one game on TV, you know, he had to pick one on TV, there was only one he was ever going to watch. And I wonder what difference it is in terms of Rugby League being given the prominence because all eight games are on TV, you can watch every single game of it, and it is generally a closer contest. If you're just a floating sports voter, you know, there's always been rusted on league, and there's, you know, as you mentioned, people never watching every Rugby League, but the floating voter, as it were, is essentially going, this will probably be a better spectacle. And how much is, I guess that's not so much to do with the Warriors, or that helps that the Warriors are good, that helps to do with the product in general, right?
Yeah, look, what they've done with Super Rugby is they've successfully killed it. The Fishheads are absolutely brilliant in New Zealand. I mean, they hire another six performance managers and they get another XCOM and then they get another review and they outsource their work. They spend a hell of a lot of money on everything other than what they should be spending it on, which is actually about the fan and actually making the fan experience. You know, Mark Robinson, the CEO of New Zealand Rugby, he throws around terms like fan-centric and fan engagement. Like, you know, some dickhead's just walked in and written it on a whiteboard in a PowerPoint presentation. They wouldn't have a damn clue. And Super Rugby at the moment has it's wrecked its own audience by its own arrogance and its own complacency. It's actually not a bad product this year. That's the peculiar thing, Craig. If you watch Super Rugby this year, most of the games have actually been a hell of a watch. There's great narratives, there's great storylines. The Crusaders are bottom. I mean, this is like Man City all of a sudden being in the relegation zone in the Premier League. That's how ridiculous it is. You know, they don't help themselves. You know, they've had three rounds in a row where four teams are missing. You know, they don't look at the schedule of the NRL and think, oh, okay, well, that's a blockbuster game. Let's move our schedule around and try and actually fit it in. You can watch both sports. You can enjoy both sports. But I think for a long time, rugby in New Zealand has just sat there and just says, we're rugby and people are going to come and watch us. Well, the changing demographics and changing society, that's not it. Plus, then, of course, you add the fact that the players don't want to play. I mean, you know, you've got superstar players. This to me is the greatest point, you know, to make about this. The second round of Super Rugby was the Super Round in Melbourne, right? And the biggest lead story the day before was the players, the All Blacks, that are missing for All Black rest. We're two rounds into the goddamn competition. The All Blacks don't play until June, and they're resting players already. You know, so you got Geordie Barrett now. He's off to Leinster. You got half the best All Blacks are playing up in Japan. You know, can you imagine this? Just put this on a Warriors scenario. Oh, Adam's not playing this week. Sean's not playing this week because they're on Kiwi rest. I mean, can you imagine
the Kiwis
that?
Don't play until September or November. You know?
It's not going to happen. So, you know, rugby's not doing itself any favours. It's easy, Craig, to dump on rugby because, and being in the media, look, it's just, it's an absolute clickbait headline. Oh, you say something about the Warriors. But we're also getting in danger here of that the Warriors are becoming a sacred cow. You're not allowed to criticise the Warriors. Well, they goddamn deserve it after that performance against St George. So I know there's a lot to package in there. Sorry, I gave you about 9 hours.
No, there is. I went to a wedding maybe 18 months ago that there was some All Blacks at and had a really good chat with a very well-known former All Black who told me he doesn't watch Super Rugby anymore. He watches the NRL. That's a former All Black. Won't say his name. No names, no pack drills. But I think you're right. It's also that, you know, Martin and I work in the media, and I think that the Warriors do a better job of selling their team than New Zealand or New Zealand Rugby Union. You try and approach New Zealand Rugby Union things, they'll put up all the barriers. They only want all the good news that's coming out. So it's I'm not saying they're like North Korea, but it's quite similar the way that you only want to hear, you know, good news about Dear Leader, which is the All Blacks and Super Rugby. And that's what's stopping a lot of that coming through is the way that they promote the actual team itself. Whilst if you look at rugby league, they'll let it go. They know it's a soap opera. They love those stories. If you have a look at the Crusaders this year have fallen, dropped down so far. Compare how the way that the Crusaders plight is being treated in New Zealand media to how they're treating the South Sydney Rabbitohs in the Aussie media. The Rabbitohs, and it'll be the Eels now too, will be absolutely hammered. It'll start the chat on social media. People will be saying they love it when the fans bag their own team. With the Crusaders, maybe one or two articles I've read, Martin certainly will have a go at them every now and then, but New Zealand media generally sits back and, oh, well, we can't really touch them. They've been previous champions. They've deserved their chance to sit in the limelight. Why not have a go at it? They've dropped so badly. The coach is doing so badly, and he didn't do very well at the Waratahs. Why not attack them? Why is New Zealand rugby putting up the shutters rather than, as Martin correctly pointed out, we live in this social media age, the age of little short little sound bites. Why not let it be open slather and let the people decide, let the people talk about it? So I think it's one of the big differences between the two.
I think you've probably touched on something that's very different. Obviously, I come from a background in the UK where we don't have the same intense rugby league media. And I find a lot of the time in the UK, we're a lot more analytical. We don't do the soap opera as much because we don't have the stars. You know, the average punter in Manchester doesn't know who, you know, Jack Walesby is compared to, say, how everybody, even who doesn't, my missus who doesn't like rugby league knows who Latrell Mitchell is. So we kind of don't have that. So that you tend to get, I think, a better or more analytical bent, but then you also get, I feel like in the rugby league media here, it's because it is so parochial, it kind of, everyone knows where the clicks are, and it's the only thing better than South's winning is South's losing, you know? And I think there's probably something in that the Warriors get to feed off this constant energy whilst they themselves, and I guess this is my question, is they have this brilliant redemption arc from being the exile team who did it tough, you know, who finished bad, you know, lost games but were marooned out in Redcliffe. And then suddenly they come home and then they become good almost immediately. Like it is, much as they are the sacred cow and you can't really criticize them, like if you take a long view on it, it's such a positive story that other teams, for example, in teams of Super Rugby, didn't have to do that in the same way that the Warriors did. Do you think that's maybe why that people see, you know, that it's broadly the same cadre of players who've gone through that experience and then kicked on? Is this great homecoming that just seems to keep going?
Look, I think the underdog thing's big in New Zealand for a start, right? Like, I mean, we love all our underdog sports teams. We've always liked the Kiwis. We've always liked the Black Caps. We've liked teams that are better against
them. I think the Maroons are an underdog team for some reason.
No, they've stuffed the Maroons, mate. Oh, Queensland, always out of Queensland. Look, yeah, I think when it comes to this, you know, the Warriors have been, you know, dog for so many years. And when a team is that bad, it kind of, people gravitate towards it because they're almost like lovable losers, and they have been that for a really long time. The fact that they're winning now is the reason that people have jumped on them, and that so many people are supporting them, because they have gone from zero to almost hero, making the playoffs last year. And you know, rugby, as I say, it's been complacent for a long time. But also, when your team wins and wins and wins, look, I remember having an argument on air a couple of years ago with Mike Hosking and Scott Stevenson about this, and they were bemoaning the fact that the All Blacks had beaten Australia by 40 points and saying, "Oh God, we've got to close this gap. This isn't good." And I remember saying, "What are you dickheads talking about, mate? Kick the hell out of them, kick them when they're down, kick the crap out of them, and kick them again, because it turns, and it turns so quickly." And we've just seen that with the Warriors in the last couple of weeks. You know, Super Rugby aside, they have stuffed with from the time that it was Super 12 and was a great competition, then Super 50. I mean, who can even keep up? Super 18, four different teams and comps, and everyone gets a prize and a lolly at the end of it. They've wrecked any tribalism with this competition, and they've taken away, you know, the natural competitiveness of it. So I don't think COVID helped it at all, but now they're trying to rebuild it again. The NPC is just dead in the water. And so, you know, that used to be the big tribalism in New Zealand rugby, was your home province, you know. So you take all of that aside. I remember talking about this to Steve Chew in 2011 before the Rugby World Cup, saying you're in danger of losing a generation here because you can't get to the players. There are, as Craig says, there's no narratives, there's no storylines. You know, you don't get access to them. The public don't see them. All you see is this cheesy Women's Weekly stuff on NZR Plus. And, you know, if that's how you want to sample your sport, we'll go and sample your sport with 30-second sound bites. And, oh, this is how I bake my chocolate cake bollocks stuff. I mean, you know, the rest of us who are fans want the meat of it, and we want to discuss and we want to debate. And Craig's exactly right. New Zealand rugby's been fearful of that for a really long time. Look, I don't think it's a war between the two codes at all. I think you can watch both and you can enjoy both. But I don't think rugby helped themselves at the moment.
Yeah, and you bang on, and they're almost going through a civil war at the moment. I don't know if many people in Australia have been following the ups and downs and the roller coaster ride of New Zealand rugby at the moment. And I'm not going to go into normal Martin because it'll take us an hour. So do a Google search on New Zealand Rugby Board.
You'll be asleep at the end of it, mate. Yeah,
because you don't want to get into any of that. But I think Martin also had a point. I remember years ago I worked for Sky Sports in London when Super 12 first came in. Great crowds. It was fantastic. And I used to go to the pub, and the British people used to say to me, "What a competition. How lucky are you down there to have that? We'd love watching that." And then we used to see NPC used to get piped in, big crowds, and we would go, "Wow, New Zealand rugby's really got it together." What has happened to NPC? The bottom has fallen out of it. It's a bit like if you look at rugby union in Australia, the bottom falling out of that, it happened at the grassroots level. And the fish rots from the, you know, the head down to the tail, as Martin has correctly pointed out. Whilst rugby league seems to have it more together, the lucky thing that New Zealand rugby league has at the moment is it has one team in the NRL.
Yeah,
they can pour all their energies into that. Yeah. The big test will be if a second team comes in. The players are already going to Australia to play or playing in rugby in Europe or, you know, France or England. How are they going to go when there's a second team here and the resources are going to be piped in into two teams? That'll be the big test, because the Warriors have had the support even when they're losing at the moment, and they got cursed the last few weeks because all the experts started coming out in Australia and tipping them as potential grand finalists, which is too early to pick grand finalists. And the minute that Joey Johns and Matty Johns started writing full-page articles about them, we knew, didn't we, Mark?
Yeah, had to happen.
They were going to put in a performance like that's the Dragons, because much as they like to say they don't read the press, oh, yes, they do.
Of course they do.
Something psychologically, because as we know, they read the press. There are NRL players who will never talk to me again because of something I said off the cuff. They all watch the media, they all read, and that's what happened on the weekend. So the worst thing that can happen, it's great if the Kiwis get behind them, but once the Aussie media starts getting behind them, it's game over. So I'm actually, the respect will come if they start criticising them, and maybe it'll start this week.
So you just touched on that. So here's an analogy that I wanted to throw at you, right? Because this is how I've sort of characterised the second team idea, which is, at the moment, like, here's a pop quiz. Who's the most supported football club in Sydney?
As in sort of Round Ball football or the...
No, as in membership numbers, the most supported football club in Sydney.
Please, don't tell me it's the Sydney Swans. Don't.
It's the Swans.
Okay. Is it?
The Swans. Yeah, because there's only one of them. So you have the Swans, who have, you know, the highest average attendance and I think the highest membership. And but then it's because there's only one of them and there's, you know, nine rugby league clubs and soccer clubs and whatever. And you look at what happened when GWS come in and they don't exist. Nobody knows they exist because
and the AFL are pouring
good money after bad at a team that should be in Canberra. You could have a third team to support, Craig. But like, so my worry would be that you take the good thing that you have and go, well, surely we can just do this times two, and you end up with the, you know, South Island Giants who are, you know, cannibalised the media market. And I'm sure if we got Cameron George on from, you know, or someone from the higher-ups of the Warriors, that's exactly what they would say.
Well, Andrew Webster said that. He did say that. He said that about 3 or 4 months ago, I remember, that he didn't think there was room for another team at the moment, and that, you know, that they let the Warriors actually be what they are and let them actually grow and let them capitalise on it. Interesting that when they've played 2 games, I think, a warm-up and also a competition game in Christchurch, they've sold out both at the Crusaders ground, you know, 16,000 to 17,000. Look, we'll find the answer to this, I think, also, or a little bit more when Auckland FC start next year, and you've got the Phoenix and the A-League down in Wellington and an Auckland team, and how that support splits as well. You've got to remember that this is only a small catchment area. I mean, we're only the size of a Sydney or a Melbourne as a country, really, just a little bit bigger than that. So, yeah, it's a good point to make. The Warriors capture the market because they are the one single team. Plus, I don't think, you know, the way that they've changed the rugby laws has helped as well. I mean, you've got to think, you know, think of the most popular sports in the world. Football and basketball, it's pretty simple, isn't it? There's about 3 rules in football. An offside line, the ball goes in the net. With basketball, get the ball down the other end of the court. With rugby, I mean, let me grab it here. I mean, this baby here is, I mean, I read this at night, of course, because, you know, I can't get to sleep. There's 190 different bloody pages of rules in there. And that was 2 years ago, and it's doubled in size, the rugby rule book. And so, you know, when you're looking at people who don't actually like sport that much and they just come to sport and they just watch it, rugby league is a really simple game, easy to understand. It's fast and it flows. As opposed to, I sit there watching rugby, Craig, you do, you know, after 40, 50 years of watching the bloody thing, I sit there and I go, I don't know what that penalty's for. I don't know why.
Yeah. Ask we went up at Eden Park on Saturday night. My son took a couple of his schoolmates, one from China, one from France, and poor Tommy had a devil of a time trying to explain rucks and mauls, lineouts. What are they doing now? Hang on, they just drove over the line. Hang on, now they're going to have a look at this. What are they looking for? Like, try and explain that. Whilst rugby league, you just tackle the guy in front of you.
That's it.
6 tackles, boot it downfield, they get the ball and start again. You just need to get across the stripe. So it's an easier game to make it explain that way. But what do they do? What's the solution? I'm with maybe it's Martin. Am I detecting here? I don't think they should put a second team, rugby league team in New Zealand. Just let's get the Warriors right. Make them like the Broncos or the Storm, where they're always up there, always making the finals. And maybe look at another team in 10, 15, 20 years. Population's growing. There's still time to do it. Maybe the time is to put a team in Perth and Papua New Guinea, which they're determined to have.
They're determined to, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Do you have to have a second team in New Zealand? Is there demand on the South Island? I don't think it passed the pub test when I was on my famous golf tour. No one wanted to talk rugby league. They wanted to talk rugby union. It's probably similar in Sydney. I'm surprised that the Swans are number one. I don't have many mates in Sydney that we'd go in the pub and talk Aussie rules. We talked rugby league and they would bag the shit out of rugby union. That's what we used to talk about in the pubs.
I was in the city on Sunday afternoon, the Swans were playing, and there was a lot of scarves around. And I think it's the, obviously they have the 36,000 seat stadium and the culture of membership. So I think it's more that they individually are bigger than any of the other individual clubs. But obviously, like, I couldn't tell you a single person I know who actually likes it and watches it, you know, other than people who've lived in Melbourne or are from Melbourne, you know. So I think it is that idea where, like, would they begin to cannibalize what they already have? And I guess the second part of that is that New Zealand is a net exporter of rugby league players. So the obvious thing is how many of those athletes who currently, like if you grow up, if you're Solomon Al-Nilo and you're growing up as an elite athletic person who liked both codes of rugby, at the moment you're more likely to play rugby union because that's where there's, you know, however many different contracts going, whereas there's only one Warriors. And if you don't want to play for the Warriors or they don't want you, you've got to move to Australia. So I wonder, is that talent pathway? Everyone would tell you that there is that pathway there. And what you mentioned about the growth or sort of the death of the national professional, is it provincial or professional competition? The NPC in New Zealand.
Provincial, yeah. Now it's probably semi-professional at best, to be honest.
So there's on a previous episode of this podcast, we've talked about sort of how you make a first grader, right? And how many more professional opportunities exist if you play rugby league than, say, soccer or cricket or basically any other sport, male and female. The pathway is just all the way through to the league. And you can be a professional all the way from, you know, playing in the captain coach in the country to second grade out here. You still basically only, all that you do is play rugby league. So if you had that second team, for example, all the guys who end up playing semi-professional NPC rugby union, when they're 14, are they going to go, well, actually, the best chance for me to make it from as a professional athlete might be in the NRL.
Being part of it also is that I think in a lot of ways the Warriors, what's happening with the Warriors is actually a good thing for rugby because it needs a reset and it needs to rethink. And, you know, what Craig mentioned before about the whole governance of the game, the structure and that, there's a lot of things that do need to change. The thing that rugby's got, the big advantage that it has in New Zealand is, of course, the All Blacks and the international game, which rugby league can't offer. It can offer a World Cup every 4 years. It can offer a few test matches at the end of the year. If you're a rugby player in New Zealand, you've got the potential to be a contract in Japan. You've got a contract in Europe. If you manage to make the international game, well, you can actually earn huge riches from that game and big exposure in a market where rugby league can't dominate in the same way. You know, the Rugby World Cup is still one of the top five, maybe top 10 world sporting events. You know, the Rugby League World Cup can't compare on that. So, you know, I look at a guy like Nathan Cleary and think you've won three premierships in a row. How many do you win in a row? Five or six? What's next? I mean, if you get to 29 and go, you know, like Joseph Manu's done, I've won a couple of these. What do I do next? Rugby does have some other opportunities outside of that. But again, I think they can both coexist in this country and coexist well. What rugby just simply has to do is reconnect with its own fan base. And the biggest difference between the two, and you'll find this, Craig, is if you go to a Warriors game, you have a blast when you go to that game. The crowd's nuts. The crowd goes ape. You can see this is what sports fans do. We lose ourselves in the moment. You can be an adult. You can act like a kid. You go to a rugby game. Not playing bloody well, are they? Oh, yeah. The referee sucks. God, the All Blacks only won by 50 points. That's the truth, isn't it? The rugby crowd's a grumpy crowd. The Warriors crowd's a fun crowd. They've got to somehow realize this, accept this. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing and somehow correct it. And they've got big brains down in Wellington, paid a lot of money to do this. So I know what they'll do. Let's outsource and have a review because it's about time, Craig. We haven't had one for 12 months now. Let's have another review.
Yeah, there's something in that. There's if you look at, for example, like my first memory of like a huge rugby league event in New Zealand is the Tonga games in the 2017 World Cup. which you see a crowd which is entirely Kiwi-born, or you know, mostly Kiwi-born people, but supporting Tonga, you would get the same for Samoa. And you look at the crowd, it just, you know, I've never been to a Warriors game, I've never been to New Zealand, but you look at the crowd and it's a very diverse crowd, which probably brings a different atmosphere to what you would get, for example, at a Super Rugby game, where it might be a lot of middle-aged white guys going, well, that's a good mall. I don't
know. Damn those middle-aged white guys, I say. Damn them all, Craig.
Yeah. But do you think that it's an element to it as well? Because one of the things, I guess we'll get onto it in a minute, but I know that Andrew Webster is a coach. Like, I've met him a few times at events around sort of engaging with Pacific people, how different challenges the Pacific environments. We've done a whole episode of this podcast about it, in which John Oliver was going on about how much he loved Andrew Webster for exactly this reason. And this is something that is that aspect where you look where the stadium is and the demographics of where it is and the demographics of the fan base. It is very different to what I would imagine most other sports, certainly in Australia as well.
Yeah, I would say whenever I would, when I worked at News Hub, or old News Hub, which is about to go, and sometimes we used to go and do Vox Pops in South Auckland to find if the All Blacks were playing. It was sometimes hard to find All Blacks fans in because they were wearing rugby league jerseys. And they go, oh, mate, I'm more of a rugby league fan. I think particularly it just depends. There's pockets of rugby league support in New Zealand. My son goes to university in Waikato University. Mad for both league and union there. The South Island, of course, is rugby union. Wellington, yeah, the Wellington Christchurch might, you know, Christchurch might be into it a little bit. But I think what you've touched on there is between the two teams, well, the two sports in New Zealand, Sky has both sports. So you can watch them all there. Sky do you know, a fairly good job of broadcasting rugby union, but certainly they take all the rugby league out of Australia. And I think it's quite noticeable the different way that they promote the two sports. With Sky, they've obviously taken the strategy just to show the live games. There's not as much support content-wise around it, whilst the rugby league coming out of Australia, which is on Fox, which they're taking it, there's a lot more. The NRL 360 shows, the kind of Matty Johns shows, the post-games and pre-game shows. I think that's one area, Martin, don't you think, that maybe Sky could improve on is the way that they cover these things, the way that they broadcast
totally.
Them.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, and also do it with some honesty and some truth and do it. You know, part of the problem that, you know, Sky has and New Zealand Rugby has is that New Zealand Rugby owns a shareholding in Sky. And so you're not allowed to criticise that team. It's like you're not allowed to criticise the Black Caps. And I do get frustrated at the Warriors coverage in New Zealand. I find all of these pre- and post-game shows just nauseatingly dull and boring and cheesy. You know, the great thing, you know, about what the Warriors have actually allowed as well is that this whole Up the Waz movement has grown, you know, and organically such an overused word when it comes to this, but it's grown by fans themselves making their own content and having fun doing it. Now, New Zealand Rugby has to control the message, as Craig said right at the beginning, every single thing about the sport. It is the Politburo, and it just can't lose itself to think that, you know, two guys sitting here talking about the Crusaders and saying what a load of poop that team is at the moment. What is wrong with that? You'll never get that on New Zealand television. You'll never get a program like that. And even Scott Robertson last year came on our show here, Platform, and he said, you know, he was over in Australia and he actually asked me, why don't we have rugby shows like NRL 360? I said, well, go and ask your bosses, mate, because, you know, this is the other people that determined this. And I think that is what fan engagement is. It's just letting fans be themselves and talk about this stuff, or getting people that actually are prepared to criticise, and New Zealand Rugby just won't have it. So, you know, while this disconnect goes on, nothing is actually going to change. But as I say, they'll hire another six pathway managers and they'll write another report, and then they'll email that report to the review people who will outsource it back to the people that did the first review. And it just goes round and round and round. So we can talk about it as much as we want, but whether or not those people who make the decisions and get paid to make them are actually listening and will do anything about it, they seem to rely entirely, I think, on the fact that the All Blacks are the number one national team and that people are in love with the All Blacks and always will be in love with the All Blacks. You know, the Warriors, what they've done is come along and they've just thrown that spanner in the wheel a little bit. It's probably, as I say, the best thing that could happen to rugby. It gives it a chance to actually look at itself and go, okay, why aren't we fun? And that's all sport is, man. In the end, that's all it is. It's an escapism. I mean, you know, I'd rather talk about this than talk about my relationship or anything else going on in my life, because it's just fun. is what it is. And the Warriors are bringing it. And, you know, as soon as you see, you go to a Breakers game, you see it, you go to see what the crowd is like at the Black Caps, you know, when for a T20 game or something. People use sport. Some people like to do their garden. Some like to walk their dog. Some wash the car. I use sport as relaxation and escapism like a lot of other people do. And it's fun to me. And whether I'm bitching about it, moaning about it, loving it, lording it, it doesn't matter. It's fun. And that's what I think the Warriors have brought. They brought a sense of that.
You see why Martin Devlin is my favourite New Zealand broadcaster?
Nice and on the fence about things.
Wind him up and let him go. I'm just on Martin's point there about, you know, wanting to control the narrative. I used to work for an ill-fated FM talkback station here called Today FM, no relation to the Aussie version. And our breakfast presenter once had the former All Blacks coach Ian Foster on, only once, because she dared actually ask difficult questions of him, and then so the entire network was banned from interviewing players, administrators, coaches forever, or at least until they had all these serious chats behind the scenes. That's the kind of thing we're dealing with, as Martin has touched on, that there's no way you could have a Rugby 360 show done out of New Zealand with people like Martin Devlin actually talking truth to power and holding them to account, and then not expecting it to be taken off air the next day. It would never happen. And I think that's a really valid point, because they do. We live in this age of TikTok. I read an article yesterday that that traditional media, television media, has dropped 87% from that the platform that we used to watch it on, that now everyone is going to TikTok and Instagram to get their news, unless they find a way to just open up the doors, let the news out, let people be critical and have what they say about it. It will never kick on to the next level. I think that's borne out in the stats.
I think there's an interesting thing. What we're trying to do with this podcast, just as sort of a side note on that, is that because what we're trying to do is have like really long conversations like this where you can move around, because there's other data that suggests that while some people are getting their stuff in, you know, 13-second reels, there's much more... I've got mine asleep on the floor next to me.
Yeah,
this is not okay. Charger.
Yeah. So you know, he's just saying, Dad, you've been talking about rugby so long. I need to go out.
But people are actually looking to the very long form as well as the very short form, and I think that's something that, like, if you just to bring it back to the Warriors, if you go to the Warriors, right, and you say, I want to speak to Tobi Harris or whoever, they have to put up every single player X amount of times, and they have to put up their entire squad X amount of times, and they have to put up their coach X amount of times every week. And you can complain to the NRL if they don't. And there are clubs who do this. You try and hide, say, Joseph Suoliti for 4 months, in which you can go, well, Alan, you've put up every other player now, so he has to come up. And so I think we're going to get that with Joey Manu going forwards, because he doesn't want to talk about his contract with Japanese Rugby Union. But there is that mechanism in the NRL rules, like the media code of conduct, whatever, which says you have to put these guys up. Doesn't matter if they don't want to speak. Doesn't matter if you want to hire them. If you want to hide them, sorry. They have to go up. And I feel that the NRL is very good in making its stars out there and making it so that my missus knows who Latrell Mitchell is. You know, when I know she worked in PR, and she did a thing with Buddy Franklin and didn't know who he was, but she knew who Latrell Mitchell was. And so now you have that situation where if you are the platform, or if you're Sky Sports, or if you're, you know, the New Zealand Herald or whatever, you can go and ask for Sean Johnson. And if they don't put him up tomorrow, well, they're going to have to put him up at some point in the next month. Whereas if you do that for an All Black, you might never, ever get to speak to them, which is probably holding the All Blacks back.
You know, I just think that, again, right back to the beginning of what you're saying, you know, to me, it's... both sports can absolutely happily coexist. Both sports, to me, can swap their fan bases. I think that can also happen as well. And so I don't think it's dire for New Zealand rugby. And I don't think all of a sudden the Warriors have usurped or replaced anything. I just think that what we're seeing is just things recorrect and just rebalance with a new generation of people, with people that are interested in sampling their media in other different ways than the traditional way that we did, where we just wait to get it spoon-fed at 6 o'clock or on the news at the top of the hour or whatever. And it's just, you know, you're talking about the entertainment dollar, and you've got to remember this. You're fighting for that the whole time. You know, the Warriors and Super Rugby are alongside the latest Taylor Swift album. They're going out for dinner. They're going to the pub. They're going for a movie. They're doing all of these things. They're going shopping. So, you know, somehow, you know, I'll leave you with this. The classic case of New Zealand rugby just not having a bloody clue was they talk a great game about the women's rugby and the women's product. Well, they had the final of the women's Super Rugby here, Opiki, and they lined that up at exactly the same time that the Warriors were playing Manly at 5 o'clock in Auckland. Now, you know, you're either dumbass or you're just incredibly dumbass. There's only two options for that, isn't there? Because, you know, you must know that the Warriors are clocking 27,000, 5K away at Eden Park. You know, the women went out there, and I thought were let down by the rugby union in a big stadium where no one's there. Now, they decided that on the Tuesday before the Warriors played on the Saturday. Now, you're sitting around a committee meeting in New Zealand rugby, right? I go back to an old program. You'll remember this, Craig, called the Fall and Rise Original Perrin, or the Rise and Fall Original Perrin. And he had a boss called CJ, and he had a couple of ad guys that were used to sit there and go, great, super, at every single idea that was ever bloody suggested. Now, somebody around that table at New Zealand Rugby, when they said, right, let's 5 o'clock on a Saturday, did not anybody put their hand up and go, hang on a second, the Warriors are playing at that time just down the road. I mean, not to consider that, or to be so arrogant not to consider it, that in a sentence to me says what is wrong with rugby at the moment and the people that run it. It's not... You know, we're not splicing DNA here. It's pretty damn simple to figure this stuff out. It's just that the people have got to have the heart in the right place and actually be humble enough to acknowledge that, guess what? There's a new kid on the block over there who's actually doing real well. Why don't we have a look at what they're doing and see why they're doing so well and perhaps actually just integrate a bit of that into us.
And
there you go.
And I want to give Martin a bit of a plug, because I love what it, like, I think things – platforms like The Platform, which Martin works for, and then and by the way, I love Martin's got the Rugby League Hour podcast with Tony Kemp, which I think is excellent. And I do one that goes out for my sins at 4 a.m. on a Monday morning called the NRL Reacts on MediaWorks. I think that's the kind of thing, and this podcast, of course, is the way of the future. And for the administrators in rugby and rugby league to ignore this kind of way of doing things and things like The Platform, where it's cut up and excellent broadcasters like Martin, I think that's the future. Unless they embrace that, they will wither and die on the vine, as you can see is happening with things like the NPC and in other areas.
Very kind of you.
That's a good place to end on the death of rugby union. That makes me, that will please my father when he listens to this. On that note, I will say thanks so much, Martin and Craig. As ever, I always say this, but please, if you like this, leave a review, tell your friends about it, because every good podcast you listen to is because somebody told you to listen to it. My boss and my social media guy loves it if you leave reviews, though. So please do that. Like, subscribe, etc. Also follow The Platform, which is brilliant. I listen to it all the time. And everything that Craig does, there's so much about I can't even go into. So thanks so much for your time. And yeah, otherwise.
Go the Raiders.
Go the Commanders.